Tonight is, let's call it, Caused by Andrew.
Hey, hi.
Andrew sort of considered that promising impossible things or threatening people with impossible things for the gathering was inappropriate or maybe even be fraudulent. Unless I was willing to reveal some of those impossible things. So I'm getting a buzz. Are you guys getting it?
No, I'm getting you cut off once in a while. It chops off, but...
Yeah, well, I got a big beep. Okay. Unless I reveal some of those impossible things so that you could judge whether they're really impossible. And so tonight I'm going to reveal some things, see if they're impossible. Do you remember years ago, it was only several years ago, that I pointed out that the White Witch in Alice Through the Looking Glass said, hey, you know, you really should consider an impossible thing every day. And then she declared that, why? Someday she thinks of three impossible things even before breakfast. Well, so let's consider whether these things are impossible or not. Just read a report today that Vlatko Vedral, I guess that's about Vlatko Vedral, who is a physicist at Oxford, well, he claims that tiny bits of information, and that tiny bits of information is what we call data, are the basic units of the universe. And he declares that all of reality can be understood if you accept that information, and as we have redefined that as mind, that information is the basis of everything. Now, of course, that can't be an impossible thing because we've been saying that for a lot of years. So it can't be an impossible thing. Well, let's see if the other things we will present tonight will qualify as maybe impossible things for you to consider. But then, unfortunately, it is frequently declared that if you understand things and events in life, they are just as they are. And if you do not understand matters, well, they're still just as they are. And you wholeheartedly accept this and believe it. And you base yourself in life and everything you think and do on this single idea that no matter what you understand or don't understand, things are just as they are. And that if you want to understand anything, then you have to understand how things are. Well, let's look closely and carefully at your most insidious belief. Belief that has enticed and entrapped you for a long period of time. But of course, then you got to realize that things are not the way they are. Things, in fact, are random without intention. And you make all things be as you desire. The question is, have you made your life impossible by ignoring this? Well, that's one of those impossible things. Well, if you have, let's consider that for a moment. You believe that time reveals a sequence and measures the duration of that sequence. Everybody understands that? You believe that time reveals a sequence, let's call it a sequence of past, present, and future, and then time measures the duration of that past, present, and future sequence. And you also believe that whether or not you understand time, it is still a measure of duration of the revealed sequence. Such that all things and events occur in a pattern and over a span of past, present, and future. I can't hear you, Andrew.
All right, I'm you, Raj.
What?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. That's why we stay on mute. Nothing.
Okay. So, even in fact, if you believe in living in the now, Eckhart Tolle of Canada, not Vancouver side, it's the other side, as I understand, that now occurs in a sequence and duration of past, now, future. The question is it possible that that's not true, or that you make your life impossible by making that true? If you understand that all things only exist in the past, as I've said before, that alone changes everything, such that time no longer creates or measures a duration. This all past is what I've called before nonce time. For every occasion, what it means, nonce times for this occasion. So time exists for each occasion. It does not create a, does not in fact create a force, a sequence, and it doesn't then measure the duration of that sequence. Where am I here now? Okay.
Can you say the last thing again, please?
Well, I said that if you accept that all things exist in the past, in other words, if something exists or is, then it is past. In other words, it's past its beginning. You can't say if something exists that it is future, because it exists, it's not future. It's now, or it's in the present, or it's in something or other. But whatever it's in, whatever state it's in, it's past its beginning point. So everything exists in the past. And if everything exists in the past, then you have not created a sequence, and you have not created a past, present, future duration of a sequence. Everything occurs in nonce time. If everything is in the past, then time is just a something that is occurring in nonce time for each occasion. In other words, could time be different for each occasion? Okay. And even if, as like Eckhart Tolle says, Tolle, by the way, being present or living in the now is an aspect of a duration. The now is an aspect of the duration as past, now, future. So he's still stuck in and hasn't gotten himself out of time as a sequential pattern and a measure of duration of that pattern. Well, in order to get out of this trap, in other words, if you understand time, as the belief says, no matter what you think it is or understand that it might be, time is. Well, maybe time isn't. Can you imagine time as a force in life? Doesn't create a sequence. It doesn't measure the duration of that sequence. But as a nonce time, could you see it as a force? Could you see time as a quality for conveying matters intensely? That's a force. If we say conveying matters intensely, doesn't the past seem, well, not so intense? It's gone. Present is intense. And the future might be intensely hopeful. But that whole definition is a definition of a force. For the force, like as an example, the force of his words create an intensity. You might say as an example of using time as, using force as an intensity. The force of his words created an intensity. Can you consider time as a force, as an act or course that forces your attention and response into a pattern? You see, past, present, and future kind of does that. That's the definition of a force, to force you into an act or course that forces your attention and response into a pattern. Well, time is doing the same thing. It forces you into the present, as opposed to the, well, the past is gone, that doesn't make so much difference. And it forces you into a present. Well, yeah, you know, worried about the future, but it's not here yet. So time, as we think about it as a sequence, forces you your attention and response into a pattern. Well, that's a force. That's the definition of force. Can you think of time as a way to influence by push and pull? In other words, push and pull is the attraction of the present, or the past is gone, doesn't have much hold or push or pull on your life today, and the future hasn't come yet. So that time then acts as a way to influence the things that are important, or to try to push you into the future or pull you away from the past, you see? That's a definition of force. Can you consider time as a force by the power of compulsion or constraint? Well, time as a present, a past, present, and future, well, you have sort of a compulsion to do or change things off into the future and restrain yourself from repeating things in the past. So time is a force in creating this pseudo pattern, is doing all the things that define a force. Actually, a force is a force of attraction or repulsion. You are quite frequently attracted to the future and repulsed by, well, many times the present and the past. A force tries to force you into an importance or unimportance. And we say, you know, the past, well, hell, that's unimportant. The only thing that's important is right now, or the future is, well, it is important, but it isn't here yet. That's a definition of a force. It forces you, or attempts to force you, into a condition of importance or unimportant. Well, if you can consider all of these things as time is actually a force by these definitions, then you might consider that time is an active and supportive force in your life and never acts against you. Does anybody understand that?
I don't know. I have a question. What was the last statement you said?
I said that if you understand these things as the actions of time are actually the actions of a force, then if time is a force, it is a force in your life that you can use, which actually supports you. And it doesn't act against you. It doesn't independently act against you. It's merely a force that you can use.
Right.
Okay, is this force, as we're talking about it, acting on things of physical manifestation?
Sure.
Or is it a force of in mind?
Sure.
That draws me into importance, unimportance?
Sure.
Both?
Sure.
I guess both. Huh.
But okay. What I want to do is, you see, we look against a time. We think time is only a measure of duration. What if time is actually an active, or you can apply it as an active or force that supports you, or an active force that acts against you?
Okay.
Would that not change the nature of your life in relationship to time?
Mine it would, yes.
Yeah, well. So let's consider that for a moment. Let's consider the possibility then that time doesn't set a sequence of events as past, present, and future, or past, now, future even. And it does not then become merely a measure of that sequence that it has created. That it is in fact a force, and see if time is a force, how that might change your life altogether. Well, if...
Do you mind giving the definition of force again?
I gave you the definition of force. Force is a quality for conveying matters intensely. A force is an act or course that forces your attention and response into a pattern. Time does that. Force is a way to influence you by push or pull.
Conveying matters and what?
If what?
Conveying matters and what?
Conveying matters intensely. In other words, I can shout at you. That's a force. And in doing that, I am conveying matters very intensely. Stop along! Pay attention! Time does much the same thing. Hey, hurry, 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 hurry! Pay attention!
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
So everything, by definition, essentially, that we consider is a defining aspect of force, is in fact a defining aspect of time. Then what happens if we say, well, yeah, then maybe time is a force in my life. It's an active force in my life which I can use. Well, if science is correct, as it declares that all things are composed of matter and energy, which then can be changed from one state to the other, but can never be created or destroyed, and all things can be reduced to energy, if this is true, and that's what science says, if this is true, and maybe it seems to be, then time is either a thing or an energy, and it appears to be an energy. And as an energy, it's a force. Science doesn't allow us or give us any... Wait a minute. Science can't even function if all things are either an energy or a thing, a matter, a particle, a something. Then you can't have time, can't exist, unless it's one of those two forms, as far as science is concerned. And so it doesn't seem to be a thing that we, it's a measurement or something, but it doesn't seem to be a thing as an in matter, then it must be then a thing as in energy. And energy is a force. Is this okay? Okay. Well, if that's true, and it seems to be true, then in measuring the speed of light in the universe, you are actually measuring the force of light in the universe. Got it? The speed of light is distance covered over at a certain rate over time. Okay, well then, if time is a force, then you're actually measuring the strength or the force of light. You are not measuring the speed of light. Is that okay? Or is this too impossible for you to consider?
Nope, makes sense.
Ah, but where does it go? Well, we'll discuss the whole thing about measuring the force of light and all of that thing. We'll discuss that later. Right now, we want to move on. For the nonce time, for the now, for the nonce, for this occasion, right now, it is important for you to understand that the duration of yourself and life is measured by its intensity. Got it? If time, then, is a quality for conveying matters intensely, then it seems that the duration of yourself and life is a measure of its intensity. Are we okay, or is it too impossible?
I'll say that again, Roger, that whole phrase.
Okay. If one of the definitions of a force is conveying matters intensely.
Right.
And then time does the same thing. The past is not so intense, the present is intense, and the future isn't here yet, so it's not so intense. So time itself, and whoever just clicked in and just has an open mic, has to do something about
okay,
that.
Okay, that's me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Well, it just took me half an hour to get in there. Would you like me to mute my mic?
Well, you made it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
so
fine.
I made it through Gmail, so it's a different way than I normally come in. So I don't know if it's
maybe not. Okay. Well, then, where we go, I've forgotten who asked me this. Oh, yeah, it was Sally. Then, if time is a force that conveys matters intensely, then the duration, the time of your life, is a measure of its intensity.
Right.
In that, then, that eternal is also a measure of strength and power, or intensity.
Right.
Right. Is this okay? It's not too impossible for you to believe. Is that okay?
No, it's logical. Makes sense.
Well, logical might not be what I want you to understand. I want you to create pictures of all of this going on.
Right, but as you're talking about it, even in the languaging, I can follow it. It makes sense. And for me, that means logical as you're progressing one statement after another.
Okay, but what I want to do then is make sure that it doesn't make language sense,
okay,
but that it makes observational sense, that you are creating a picture and seeing, oh, well, the intensity of my life is a measure of my life, and a life lived as internal. By that understanding, that a life lived by eternal is a measure or strength of the power and force of my life.
Right.
So living in the now depletes that power and strength. Living in the eternal at all time increases the intensity of that strength and power of your life.
But Roger, is there a now? Is there an actual now, or are you saying nonce time?
Well, I meant nonce time, but you see, what I'm doing is in a lot of this saying, I don't know who the group was that voted that the Dalai Lama was number one spiritual being in the world, and Eckhart Tolle, with his living in the now, is number two spiritual being. Hogwash!
Right.
Living in the now depletes the strength or power of yourself in life. Living as an eternal being is far more strong and powerful than living in the now. Because there is no now in all of it. There's no such thing as a now. Everything is in the past.
Right. Exactly.
Well, then you can see then that just this closer look at time could certainly change everything about the self and life you're living.
Right.
Well, what I want to discuss is more about the environment in which you live. And if I talk about the environment in which you live in that regard, but we can talk about these other things later. For nonce, I want to talk about the environment. Maybe you'll be interested in this. Well, maybe you won't. I don't know. Maybe you don't really give a damn about the environment in which you live, only if you get your own gets, whatever that means. Well, let's see. In measuring the speed of light, as I said before, as a force of light, since light radiates outward from a source, such as from, well, in stars and galaxies, or maybe light existing somewhere else in the universe, it radiates out from a source. Can you possibly consider that the force of light is the force that expands the universe?
Yeah.
If it radiates out from a source, whatever that source is, and it radiates in all directions, or it is a constant, like speed, it is a constant force. And it's
right.
And it's a zippity-doo force.
Right.
Let's see then. Okay. It radiates out from a source, from the stars or the galaxies or whatever, and it exists everywhere in the universe. Therefore, it's reasonable to assume for the moment, in the nonce, the force of light is the force that expands the universe. I guess the question is, wait just a minute now, into what? What is space?
Right.
Does it make sense that the radiating force of light defines space? That where light is, space is, and where light isn't, space is not? If we can measure the force of light and the speed of light, it must be measured in an environment of space. So therefore, we would say then that as light radiates out from a source, we can measure that as a force, but it's defining the space in which it radiates.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Space would not exist per se if there were no light.
Ah, you see? So therefore, light is defining or creating the space in which it radiates as it radiates.
Right. Right. But speed would not exist without the concept of time.
That's right. And since time is a force, then in measuring the speed of light, you're actually measuring the force of light.
Right.
So now what we're doing is we're looking at this as light, as something entirely different or other than we've ever thought of it. But that's not so impossible. It's an impossible thing. But when you think about it carefully, like I said in the brochure, be prepared to listen to and hear some impossible things and maybe to understand it. Now, if you listen carefully, could you not then create a picture that as light radiates out, it pushes everything in the universe out or away from its source, no matter where that source is, and that expands the universe into the definitions of space that light determines.
Right.
Well, you know, if that makes sense to you, that's great. Because now we're going to consider it just a little more carefully. In the beginning, there was no Big Bang. The fact is, there was no explosion from a singularity. Scientists would say, well, yeah, I know, there was no Big Bang because there was, in that then, there were no elements created that would allow a bang to occur. But I'm saying there was no Big Bang at all. There was no explosion from a singularity. What if there was no singularity? What if everything wasn't just squinched down into a single point or a singularity? What if the universe just rained down everywhere? Does that make sense to everybody?
Right.
Right?
Just what? Raining down?
Yeah. It just rained down everywhere. And Sally says, right. Well, would you please explain that to me, Sally? I wondered about that.
Well, I think that even in the thinking and languaging, we still, well, say we, generic, me in particular, have thought in our mistaken languaging of thinking that there's one something, and then there's things that come from that one something, that whole cause-effect.
Right.
So to think of a multiplicity to begin with rather than a one something is reversing the direction of the thinking and the languaging.
Right. Now the question is this: how did we get to that multiplicity in the first place? So let me give you an example. What science always does is, and this wasn't a part of tonight, I was going to leave it, but it's part of the out of August seminar. However, I'll present it now, which is said, all of this is created in book one, article one, chronicle one, excuse me. Okay. If I take a balloon and blow it up, and on the outside of that balloon I have marked stars and galaxies and stuff and this kind of stuff, and I can watch cacao, the scientist, or Lagrassi or Degrassi, or Einstein blow up the balloon, they're going to say that, like Hubble said, well, all those things on the balloon move away from each other. That's a red shift. And therefore, if everything on the balloon moves away from each other, that meant that if we reverse that process, at some time they were all together in one point. Not true. Take a picture of a football. Have you ever looked closely at a football? It's got a little valve on it, a hole in it. You stick a needle in the football, and then you attach a pump to that and pump up the football.
Right.
If I put a needle into a football of any size, I can blow up the football from any place or any position within the football.
Right.
That means then that everywhere on our balloon and everywhere within the balloon, everything is moving away from everything else.
Oh, yeah.
That means then, if that's true, which it is, that everywhere is the center of the universe.
Right.
So if the universe collapses, it collapses to everywhere. Since everywhere, every place you look, everything is moving away from you, then you must be at the center of the universe. Wherever you are, that's the center of the universe, and it is expanding from every point in and on the universe simultaneously.
Right.
Roger, I have a word for you from the astrophysics community. They would say that the balloon contracts, and it contracts to every point, and all those points contract to a single point.
No, they don't contract to a single point. There is nothing that says that those contract to a single point. That's a false statement. There is nothing that shows that that's true. They can say it all they want because they have assumed a single point to start with, but I've never seen a balloon collapse to a single point.
Right. It still has the other points all intact, just in a reduced
That's right. It still has reduced to every point.
Intact in relationship to each other. It still has that.
Okay.
I got a question for you, Roger.
Okay.
You said before we can make connections and comparisons to things of like ilk. Is the universe ilk to a balloon?
Is what?
Is the universe like unto a balloon? If we can compare things that are of like nature, is the universe like enough to a balloon to make that comparison?
What I'm doing is, number one, using the scientist's example and not... Just a minute, not drawing their conclusions. Now,
correct.
If I fill up the balloon with air, or if light is a force, if I fill up the balloon with light, which is a force, and air is also can be considered a force in that direction, then they're of like ilk.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, therefore, I'm saying... Remember, we started all this by my saying it rained the universe. Let me explain that for a minute.
Yeah, I have an image, but I don't know how that functions.
Well, let's assume for the moment that that you as a being existed as a virtual being. You were anywhere, everywhere, but yet you were nowhere. And any knowing you had in that regard was only your knowing, nothing more, nothing else. Nothing could penetrate or offer you anything other than who or what you are. That's a virtual definition, essentially, of a virtual world or a virtual environment. Well, the universe around you was virtual as well. There was no thing, no energy, no matter. You could say it was just data and information, infinite data and information. But just like rain, when that data and information as water vapor accumulates, it gets to a certain point where it's too heavy for the cloud and it falls out of the cloud. In the same way, data and information can accumulate relative to memory and become so heavy that it just merely condenses and falls out of the virtual environment.
Right.
And it rained all around you. And you were there. You saw what happened. I hope somehow in August to get you to describe what you saw. You were there.
Right.
But now all of a sudden that universe had just rained or condensed out of the virtual environment in that regard gave you opportunities that you didn't have before. In the same way as we change time as a force, then changing the universe from virtual to, let's call it, something, that something gave you an opportunity, or excuse me, it didn't give you the opportunity, but because of that universe becoming something, you could be something as well in the universe. Is that okay?
Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So, what we've got here now is no Big Bang. There was a big, what? Big sigh? A big murmur? Because there was no explosion, no singularity. It just rained the universe. And it rained the universe everywhere. Now, I don't mean by that it rained trees and cows and pigs. It rained energy and mind particles and data and information and all of this kind of stuff. It rained the elemental properties. That okay? All right.
That's maybe why it's ongoing. It's not a one.
So the light in the universe is expanding the universe even today.
Yeah.
And the universe is particles and energy is raining out of the virtual world even today. Mm-hmm. And where there was a Big Bang, if you ask a scientist, when did the Big Bang stop? He's not going to give you an answer. But I'm going to say it's still raining particles and energy.
Right.
Well, okay. So now we have that the force of light expands the universe. After it rained the universe, then the force of light in the universe... Wait a minute. Well, wait just a minute now. I got something going here. If the force of light expanded the universe after it rained, but the stars didn't exist before, I mean, didn't exist immediately, maybe there is a source of light prior to the existence of the stars. Is that too impossible to think about? What if you think about that for a moment? Answer this question. Is light light or is light dark? I say light is dark. You want to say it's light? Hello, anybody?
Light is somehow a reflection, is it?
No, it isn't. But what we see is a reflection. What if it's a reflection of dark light? And it's the reflection that makes it light. Can darkness enlighten things? Why not?
Well, but you couldn't have light, if you will, without even the dark, because then it would be a singularity which doesn't exist.
Try me again on that one.
You couldn't have light without dark.
Oh, but I'm not talking about the contrast of the two. I'm asking you, do you suspect for the moment that if light expands the universe and stars have not yet come into being, that there must be a source of light, and maybe that source of light is actually darkness, that there is a source of light other than merely stars or suns, call them what you will. We okay with that?
You want me to say something, or you just want to say yes? Yes, keep going.
I don't know what you're saying there, but say
well,
whatever.
I can hazard a guess at what you're getting at, or we can just say yep and you keep going. What do you want?
No, I want you to I'm just saying, is this all right? I'm trying to mention things that if you take them out of the blue, out of context, without having created this as a storyline, to take it anywhere out of that storyline that I am trying to convey to you, and that you can see as sort of an image here, it makes no sense. It's impossible. But the minute I put it into a storyline, you say, well, shit, why not? And I'm just simply saying, okay, well, shit, why not? Okay.
All right.
Let's go from there. So that then we could say that there is a force of light that is different than the force of light. Okay. Remember, nowadays what science is doing is saying, wait a minute, the universe is expanding. And it's expanding faster than we thought. And it's expanding faster than gravity seems to be holding it together. What's going on here? What the hell is making the universe expand? And so they come up with, say, hey, you know, we can't account for the matter either. So maybe there's dark matter out there and dark energy out there. That accounts for the expansion of the universe. Wait a minute. What if that dark matter and dark energy is merely light? That isn't reflected.
Okay.
As a light as a force rather than as a reflected force in that regard.
Right.
Well, let me, you know, the problem we've got here is that if that's true, and if science is saying, wait a minute here, what's going on with gravity? Well, I guess somewhere along here we've got to take gravity in account or this whole story is going to fall apart.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's do that. Remember, Einstein communioned space and time as space-time. Since time is a force, space-time is also a force. And space is also a force. Well, obviously it's a force if it is created and measured by the force of light. Got it?
Right.
Well, if the force of light is everywhere in the universe, pushing the universe apart, the question that still stumps astrophysicists, how and why did galaxies clump together? So here we have this force in the universe being acting every direction and all around and etc., and yet we have most of the stuff we see clumped together. Well, I guess to understand this then, you only need to look at the strong nuclear force.
Right.
Well, the strong nuclear force then acts to repulse atoms. Right? You see, at each atom then the strong nuclear force repulses atoms so they won't all come together. So that a what?
So that the singularity is not even a part of the whole universe concept.
The universe is working against, even if a singularity did occur one time, if.
Right.
It is, you could have a singularity that existed at one place, or we could have a singularity that exists everywhere. The universe is working against a singularity anywhere or everywhere ever occurring again.
But Roger, is there ever really a singularity? Because
I don't know. I'm talking about a singularity here as it rained the universe And I'm taking that like every raindrop is a single raindrop, that I'm saying that every clump of data and information, we'll call that a singularity, not of all things, but of what that data and information is.
Right, because otherwise you can't take, it has to be a clump of data, and that means multiplicity, diversity. That means more than one. So that's not a singularity, but if you're defining it as a clump, could be as per...
A singularity of what it consists of, like a raindrop.
Okay.
Ah, but you see, what the universe is doing in the strong nuclear force is trying to keep even that from happening. Which is okay. It's
right.
Rained the universe. Now let's deal with the universe as it's rained.
Right.
So that means that strong nuclear force, which acts everywhere, is acting against any possible singularity.
Right.
I'm sorry. Can you describe this force again? This strong nuclear.
Strong nuclear force that exists between atoms. I'll describe it a little further than that in just a minute.
Okay.
And I'm saying right now, what you want to look at is that force acts between atoms in a repulsive way to keep the atoms from glomping together. You stay over on your field, and you stay over here, and this guy, and this force is keeping all the atoms apart from each other so that they don't clump all together.
Okay.
We okay so far?
I think so.
So, if we can't have a singularity, we have no Big Bang. We might have a big murmur, like we have an infinite number of singularities. We could have an infinite murmur or the sound of rain falling. Okay?
Okay.
Well, there's something very unique about the strong nuclear force. That while it acts as a repulsive force to keep atoms apart, ever should the atoms somehow or other get close together, that strong nuclear force acts as an attractive force. And it's an attractive force only for those atoms that break through that repulsive barrier. So the strong nuclear force is in fact a repulsive attractive action. Do you want to consider the possibility that that strong nuclear force, which is repulsive and attractive, is actually the source and power of emergent processes?
Right.
That, you remember we said you bring certain things together. In other words, the force of the emergent processes keep everything apart. You don't realize that. But when you bring those forces together, like hydrogen and oxygen, then you break through that repulsive force of emergent. Then the force of emergent becomes attractive and it gloms on to and combines hydrogen and oxygen.
Right.
You didn't do anything. You brought it close together, and the emergent force in that regard, like the strong nuclear force, the emergent force in that regard became, it reversed its way at a certain short distance and became attractive.
Right.
Is this too impossible to consider?
No, makes sense.
Okay.
So, the emergent would be how the force know what to repulsive and what to attract.
What? No, it doesn't. There's no, it's not intentional. It repulses everything except anything that might get close enough. In other words, at a short distance, it becomes attractive. At any other distance, it becomes repulsive.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Did anybody get anything out of that statement?
Yep. Yep.
What did you get out of that statement?
I think that the whole concept of even constituent, constituent, emergent, that just really clarifies it in a universal level.
What I said is that at a short distance, that strong nuclear force acts as an attractive force, and at a larger distance, it acts as a repulsive force. Do those words bring anything special to mind?
I can't think of it.
What about the communion of eternal and personal being?
No, don't go there. Go only to those words. I'm talking about only in relative to forces and distances. Okay. Is it possible then for you to consider that if light is an infinite repulsive force that expands the universe, and that source is everywhere, that anything that comes close to that source is attracted? That attractive force is what's called gravity. Because gravity works over a distance. The further the distance, the weaker the gravity. So the further you get away from the source of the light, which is infinitely there, then the farther you get away from that particular source, it overcomes gravity and is completely repulsive. It's no longer attractive. Well, I got to this point simply by saying, wait a minute. Is it possible, let me see now, that galaxies circling around a source, wait just a minute now, circling around a source is attractive, and so matter near the source clumps together because of gravity, while the rest of the universe that's far away, etc., moves out and expands away from the source?
Wow.
You must have made an awesome point there.
That's the expansion.
I guess even the electronics like that one.
Not that's all of us dropping off, but okay, yeah.
Do you understand what we're saying here? What I'm saying here is then maybe, like the nuclear, the strong nuclear force, it's a force that acts in two different ways. Actually, one of these days, we'll, at the gathering, etc., we're going to try to say, show you that everything, well, maybe we should interrupt this for a moment, that everything acts in two different ways, or presents in two different ways. In the same way that light, which is our initial force, light, like itself, presents as either a particle or a wave.
Or a wave, exactly.
Is it possible that light, which is a force, is acting as a wave to push the universe apart, and is acting like a particle in order to pull everything together, as in gravity? We okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so we've just brought them closer. So, what I've done is I've taken a look at the quantum world and the strong nuclear force that exists within the quantum world, and scaled it up and said, maybe what is occurring in the quantum world is exactly what is happening in the language world around us, but we don't see it because we think something else is going on. Most of what we're going to try to do at the gathering then is learned from the quantum world. The presumption of that is that the quantum world, unknown till really about 1905 or thereabouts, and not really understood till about 1920 and then into the 30s, it hadn't been bitched up by language. However, Heisenberg was wrong, Einstein was wrong, and a few other people was wrong when they started trying to language what was going on in the quantum world. What I'm trying to do here is to say, okay, let's observe this force, this strong nuclear force, and ask ourselves, if we scale it up, might that not reveal a similar force that exists in the universe that is exactly like in the quantum world, only we didn't realize it because we were so damn busy languaging what we thought it was that we didn't pay any attention to what it actually was. Now, we can excuse ourselves up to 1905, maybe into 1920. We got no right to excuse ourselves after 1920 in not making these equivalences or scalings up and realize then, well, here's the problem. Realize then what's going on. Here's the problem. Einstein's the frigging problem here. Because Einstein didn't like the quantum world. Einstein said, no, I don't like the quantum world because, as Heisenberg said, the quantum world is indeterminate. It's a guessing game. It's uncertain. We'll discuss Heisenberg some other time, because he was wrong. Well, maybe I should bring that in right now. Regardless of, and I'll just bring it in as a thing, because we're going to discuss it in detail at the gathering. Regardless of how Heisenberg said about the uncertainty of the quantum world, regardless of how he arrived at that, and we'll talk about that, can you consider that the uncertainty of the quantum world is the same as the real world around you is random? And if the world, real world is around you is random, then it's really not uncertain, because you get to then particularize every random event and personalize as you desire, and so it isn't uncertain. It is certainly however you desire it to be. So Heisenberg's uncertainty of the quantum world is actually the certainty of the world around you. How about them apples? Or is that too damned impossible? Everybody's gone. Somebody breathe or say something.
No.
We okay? Are you still there then? Okay, I don't care if you don't, if you're all dead and gone. That's the way it goes. I couldn't hear any breathing or drinking, or laughing or giggling.
I'm on my second glass of wine.
Okay, good. All right. Now we've gone through Heisenberg, and we've done is extracted an issue of uncertainty that he laid upon the quantum world. Well, what Einstein says, well, I don't like that. I don't like the quantum world. God doesn't play dice with the world. And he said, well, I don't have to worry about that anyway, because what is in the, it's like Las Vegas. What happens in the quantum world stays in the quantum world. No, it doesn't. Because what is in the quantum world, there is an equivalence in the upper world. Let's call it that for a minute. But we've languaged the loss of that, or an understanding of that equivalence. Now, what I'm trying to do into presenting this thing in August is to say, well, if we don't bitch up the quantum world with language, we can learn a few things. And if we scale those, we can see a few things, excuse me. You can see a few things. And if we scale up what we see to the world around you, you'll be able to see an equivalence in the world around you and begin to understand things from an entirely different perspective. Is that okay? So now in this then, we have created time as a force, light as a force, light as a definition of space, which is okay because the force of light defines space. And then, wait a minute. If eternal is a force and light is a force and light is eternal because it fills fills the space that it defines, damn, that means you are eternal too as you fill the space that you define. How about them apples? Okay, well, Einstein didn't like Heisenberg's uncertainty, so if we say, okay, we got rid of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, and we'll explain how we arrived at that, and then we'll get rid of that. But anyway, then we're saying, in a sense, that since it acts as a random in the universe, that random is such that you can particularize and personalize anything and everything in the universe as you truly desire. Hot damn, it ain't random anymore. Oh, the problem here is that Einstein, in that regard, you understand, God doesn't play, what? God doesn't play dice with the universe. That meant that Einstein believed in God. If he believed in God, Einstein believed in a singularity, and everything that I'm saying at this point denies that a singularity or a single godness created the universe. It rained one day. We okay?
Yes.
Woo, okay. So, now in that then we can say, well, the force that is light, oh, by the way, in case you don't understand this, Heisenberg's whole concept of the uncertainty of the quantum world is based on the force of light. Ooh, hey, wow. Okay, the force that is light acts to push the universe apart and simultaneously holds it together in near a proximity. Which makes sense because gravity works over a distance. I think it's the square of the distance, isn't it? The force of gravity is depreciated by the square of the distance, something of that nature. We'll talk about that later. But now, you can see all things raining, you can see light occurring, you can see light pushing away, and that anything that comes near to ace, wait a minute, wait just a minute, anything that comes near a source clumps together in a galaxy. What's at the center of every galaxy? A black hole. Could a black hole be the source of black light in that regard? Holy moly here. And that could be a source of that light in that area at that time, which is, in sense, acting both as repulsive. But we know it acts. Oh, wait a minute. The whole black hole is gravity itself, which is a force. But what we do know is that that's a force only upon mass, things that have mass. But since all things are mind, all mind stuff is pushed out of the black hole. So now we have a black hole that is both repulsive and attractive. It is both pushing things apart and then holding them together simultaneously. Holy moly. Now we're beginning. Wait a minute. Is it possible? Hey, have you ever seen the Milky Way as a spiral galaxy? What the hell do you think makes the galaxy spiral? Wait a minute. Could it possibly be that the pulsing of attractive and repulsing, or, you know, that action between the two of that, is what creates the motion of the galaxy in the universe?
Yeah.
of each galaxy in the universe. And as that motion is, or that pulsing creates, let's call it positive, negative, or repulse and attract, that in and of itself creates the emotion, creates the motion.
The motion, yes.
The motion of the galaxies. Or, wait a minute. Since light is everywhere, that pulsing of light is what creates energy, or the action of energy. Energy is nothing unless it acts. It can be there, but could it be the pulsing of light that that induces energy to action? Whew. We okay with this, any of this, buddy? Or is there, has everybody gone, hey, you're just too out of the light. We don't believe this shit.
No, it's...
Now, what you up to now? Then, if you remember Einstein's image of, because he was only interested in the big objects of the world, etc., and he said that big objects bend the fabric of space, and so the planets circle around the sun because the sun is big and heavy, bends the fabric of space. And so everything orbits around the sun that comes close at hand as it falls down toward the sun. Oh, come on. You see, that is such a... Even establishing the fabric of space, and I've seen that repeated by scientists so many times, I'm tired of seeing it in that regard. But what we've done is offered a reasonably alternative to that. His image of the fabric of space and a big ball in the middle and all everything else circles around it. Hey, what we're saying is, what I'm saying, I won't present it at the gathering, is that the source of light as a force acts both like the strong nuclear force as both attractive and repulsive, and that is that which the force that expands the universe, and that is the force that holds or contracts the universe, and that is the force that contracts stuff of the universe into galaxies or clumps it all together, which scientists don't know how it all happened, clumps it all together and keeps the galaxies in motion. And the source of that light other than stars is a black hole. Is this getting too... If it's too impossible, I said, practice listening to and understanding some impossible things, because this is going to go on and on and on in the gathering, I hope. So objects falling toward the massive it doesn't make much sense anymore. And it certainly creates a foolish image. Okay. So, now that you've listened to that, and though you may have considered that what I'm presenting here is merely just intellectual speculation, and in that speculation it's of little concern or value to you because, well, you're seeking direct physical and emotional experiences, that you want those experiences of a mystical or cosmic or divine nature to guide you. Well, then you've heard the words that I have said, but you've not listened very well, and you certainly haven't created images of what we've described. For the world of light, as I just described it, is the world of resplendent, illuminated beings, which will reliably guide you, will affect the duration and understanding of eternal and your life and everything else. And though all of this, as you listen to it now, seems, well, that sounds pretty ordinary and it's hardly exceptional, this is just the beginning. And your life as a resplendent being then is supposed to be natural and normal.
Roger, life as a resplendent being would follow also these same ideas of the distancing, repelling, and attracting.
And that that dual nature of light as a particle and as a wave is the dual nature of all things, which could be the dual nature of eternal as a continuum, or as like a wave, or can be a eternal as recurring. Listen very carefully. When I say eternal, you only think, if you create an image, what image do you create?
Well, usually it's a forward future, but our understanding is now a backward past.
Well, in either case, it's a forward future or a backward past of what?
I don't want to use the word continuity. Is it continuity?
Yeah, that's a good word. When you think of eternal, you think of a rope. Continuous from fart to finish.
From fart to finish?
No, I know. The universe rained and you farted.
Okay.
I just got my asses and from my starts and finishes closer together.
Right.
You think of that as a rope from start to finish, from end.
Don't get a match near it.
I got a feeling that the image I'm about to bring up is going to go up in smoke. Okay.
Perfect. Okay.
You think of a rope and I think of a chain.
Okay.
So that eternal is reoccurring as a chain.
Right.
And each link, like each life, is complete within itself. Actually, each link is eternal itself. We okay with that?
Yeah.
Well, if that's okay, my question to you is, if we think of light as either a particle or a wave, let's set wave apart a minute. Yeah, let's think of as light as a particle or a wave of particles. Do you not think of like a, what do we call it, a machine gun shooting out particle after particle after particle after particle?
Right.
Photon after photon after photon?
Right.
What if that particleism takes on the image of a chain? What if each particle in that is complete within itself, but is interlinked to adjacent particles? Not interconnected, and they're not functioning as one. There's not a oneness there. There's a chainness there.
Right.
Oh. So then what we say in the same way then, each moment in your life could be complete.
Right.
And interlocked with the next moment and the previous moment.
Right.
But they're complete within themselves. Now we're getting back to time again here in that regard, if it talks about moments. They can be interlocked, but each one is complete, like a pass or a complete.
Right, so that's like nonce.
That's like nonce.
Yeah.
Each link of time or each link of eternal is nonce. It's a nonce link.
Right.
But the linkage of it makes you think or feel a continuity, which is a continuousness.
Right.
But the continuousness isn't there. It's continuous and complete only within each link.
Right. Uh-huh.
My question is, what if I showed you a chain as being, and we're going to do some experiments with this. If I showed you a chain and one link I put on that an image of Sally, and on the next link I put on a picture or an image of George. Sally is complete in the link. George is complete in the link. Sally's not George. George is not Sally. The question, do you continue, or in what way from that image do you think you might continue? If I show you that image.
That's Georgially.
Georgially. No, because the one after that is Ruth, and then John, and then Harry, then Mary, then whatever.
Well, you would call that the chain, but not the link. There's something about the chain, and that's the link.
If I show you the chain and say, this is an image of you eternally.
Right.
What have I... If I do that, what have I... What does Simone see? You got to answer that question, Simone.
And the overlapping things from Sally and George.
What else do you see? They're interlinked.
Right. I see whole Sally, whole George.
What? What else do you see?
All the Sally connections and all the George connections.
What else do you see? Do you see
emergence of those connections?
Do you see someone seeing that? I said, if I show that to Sally, do you see someone seeing that linkage?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Then maybe that person seeing the linkage and acknowledging or knowing that linkage is the you that continues, but as you, as the link of you, you do not continue.
Oh, yes. That's great image, Roger. Brilliant.
Yeah. Well, when you get through with that one, I'm going to put you around through a couple of other experiments.
That's great. That really clarifies that immensely.
So there is a you, but it has nothing to do with Sally. You would say, well, wait a minute. That means then the you is the sum of Sally and George and Ed and Mary, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Is this okay? If that's true.
So,
if that's
do I understand that correct? The seer is the ongoing thing.
No, that's not true.
Where mix I?
The ongoing.
We just defined the seer.
But wait a minute. I said the seer existed. You saw the seer exist.
Ah, okay.
So the seer isn't ongoing, it always is.
Uh-huh.
What the appearance is that the chain or the rope is ongoing, but the seer is not ongoing, because the seer, which we will in this case call a resplendent being, although it's even more or different than that, then you see how I'm all of a sudden taking you out of the limits of a link within the chain, and you all of a sudden can sense yourself as greater than that?
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
The only way I can do that is to get you to step out of yourself. We hope to do that at the gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And to show you that when you do step, only when you step out of yourself, can you begin to sense or know yourself.
Right.
Fact is, I can then show you how to see yourself. Hopefully. We okay with that?
Yes.
So that then, then when you become the link of the chain, you can also become that which observes the link of the chain and lives and experiences that link of that chain.
So Roger, the sphere then has always, if you will, existed and really is only in the past, but yet again contains nonce as part of its...
It's existing in the nonce.
Okay, that's it.
You see, when you were trying to do is to say it existed in the past and you're trying to deal with it, it always existed in the nonce in the first place.
Okay.
So it's not a matter of continuing or ongoing or any of that nature. Well, wait a minute, gee whiz. Then the force of the nonce is the force of the observer.
Right.
Hmm.
Right.
So we've taken you then out of the deterioration of time and put you into the support of the nonce.
Right.
Ah.
Wow.
Well, my question now is, if you created a picture of this or some kind of emotional understanding or something of that nature, can you see this as a something that is truly magical, and that it is cosmically defined? Can you begin picturing this, and now as we've set you out here, as also picturing the expansiveness of yourself? And if that's true, what feeling or emotion does that give you? So, what if you knew everything you did every day in the same way and had the same emotion? Would that be okay?
Yes.
And doesn't it reveal the magic, really, when you get down to this thing, the magic of the universe and the magic of life? When you stay confined to only your link, life is pretty limited.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, what if? I think I'm going to quit early tonight and leave you with this. What if you, as you are a link in a chain, the universe around you is a link in a chain? Are we getting bigger and bigger? If you stop and think about it, from your own little link position, everything you see out there doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Is this the meaning and purpose of life, just to have more taxes, if you finish your taxes? More taxes, more wine, more friends, more of the same old crap?
No, for more wine. That's okay.
All right. Okay. Well, let's quit early tonight then. And my question is, Andrew, is that okay for an impossible thing to start with? Because we got a bunch more.
That's good, Raj. Yeah.
Well, okay. That's a teaser. That's right. That's a preliminary.
That's great.
Most of what we're going to most of what I'm trying to do for this gathering, is I'm going to tell you all of these things, and then hopefully I've got ways to demonstrate these things, just like the chain and the rope and etc., and a whole bunch of other things, in such a way then that you can directly experience these things in your own life. So don't come back bitching, well, I don't know, you said all this stuff and I didn't understand it. No, I'm going to show you how to see these things, I hope.
That's great. Well, I hope you have a lot of dark matter when I get there. Cabernet and Zinfandel is what I'm referring to.
Well, we only buy it by the box. unless
send me to Costco. That's my part.
No, unless you buy, unless you drink some of Misty's Reserve.
Oh no! I'll purchase.
I don't. Yeah, you could do that. I don't drink good stuff. I just, if it's more than $3 a gallon, I don't buy it.
Oh God.
Okay.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, Roger. I'm working on my supervisor. I already presented the possibility for me to go for the whole week. So that may I may be there the whole week.
No, that'd be good.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, you'll need more than one bottle. Okay. Have fun. Hey. Good night for now. There's a teaser and so on. I said be prepared for impossible things. That's the kind of stuff I mean.
Okay.
Now, there's one other possible thing. Impossible thing. I want you to tell me what you saw when you were there when the universe rained all around you. Good night for now.